Hello and welcome back to the Millennial Ag Podcast, where agriculture is always on tap and no topic is off limits. Thanks for joining us today, your co-hosts, Valene Cawhorn and Catherine Lotsbeach.
Listeners, welcome back to this week's episode. I'm flying solo this week. Catherine is busy traveling and taking care of kiddos and a whole bunch of fun things on her end. But I'm excited to have a return guest here with us that joined us last year for a whiskey hour. So my husband, John Cawhorn, is on with us and really excited to have you back on. Maybe to get us started, would you let listeners know what you have going on, what crops are planted? Where are the cows at? What season are you in?
Well, right now we're in second cutting hay, and we have one new seeding of hay drying to be baled. The rest of the second cutting hay has already been chopped, which is super nice. I've been really enjoying having hay chopped.
Why is that?
The labor is much lower on my end, and it's really nice to have the hay gone quickly, especially with our dry climate, being able to get the hay gone in 8 days rather than 12 days since the last time that the irrigation ran is a big advantage to growth of the hay. One of the hay fields especially that I run has some shallow soil areas that dry out quickly if the irrigation isn't back around quickly. So it's sure nice to be able to turn it back on. The new seeding hay has a little bit higher value as high quality hay due to the fact that all of the alfalfa plants are closer together and the stems are going to grow much finer with as many leaves as a normal alfalfa plant would have on them. And so a lot of the nutrients ends up in the leaves, and the finer stem that's less nutritious can mix into a higher quality bale and go for a dairy quality price, which is going to bring a little bit more back, just as long as it's put up well financially. It's going to bring back more money. So a little more labor involved, but overall, I think the margin will be better on it.
Very cool. What other crops do you have going right now?
So the Coors barley has water off right now and is in the dough stage. It's going from soft dough to a little bit harder dough right now. The key with shutting off the water is you look for the soft dough and the moisture within the kernels to start to clear up rather than have a milky look to them. As the kernels are developing, they start out, or as they're filling, I should say, they start out almost having what looks like milk if you are to squeeze the kernel and pop them. And that milk eventually starches up and turns into the grain that you see at the end. So we always run irrigation up until the point that moisture within that kernel turns clear and it is less of a pop like a zit and more of like the starches have set up. Once you turn off water, there should still be 60% moisture in the soil if you've irrigated correctly, and it'll be able to carry the plant through the end stages of development of the kernel, and then it dries down to be harvested. So,
how long does the plant take from the time you turn off water till harvest?
Depending on the temperature, it'll be almost a month. So, of course, you can have a few less days if you're dealing with 90s, 100s, or if you're doing 70s and 80s, then it'll lengthen out the time that it takes to dry down.
Very cool. And then the cows. Where are the cows at this time of year?
All the mother cows, the pairs, are out on BLM allotments, desert ground, and that's actually the nicest time for the cows, in my opinion, for both of us. Cows like being out on desert alone and getting to hang out and roam as they please. And it's sure nice to not have to pay as much attention to them. Just recently, though, we've had some pink eye in one of the herds. There's a lot of flies around them and they seem to be passing the pink eye around. So I've been using antibiotics to treat those pink eyes out on the desert. It's not the procedure that we would usually use if we're at home. Usually I'd like to have a patch and a puffer and treat it that way, just keep the flies off with the patch. But while we're out on the desert without easy access to corrals, it's a whole lot easier to get them a shot of antibiotics and then watch and make sure that that's effective. We're not far from coming off the desert with the herd that's having trouble with that. So we'll be into a corral soon. We'll just evaluate as we go. Hopefully we don't have to bring them in early to get them treated.
For listeners that aren't familiar with running cows on out on the desert and public lands, how are you treating them without corrals, without a horse, without a rope? How do you treat the cattle?
So luckily we have labor intensive operation. I don't know if that's luckily for everything, but luckily for being able to treat these cows where I'm not a cowboy with a rope. I'm not very good at roping a cow or anything like that. We actually have a crossbow with a syringe arrow. So the arrow acts as a syringe as well, where as the arrow contacts the neck of the cow, it plunges back a valve that allows the air pressure that's in the arrow to push the antibiotic through the needle and into the cow as it hangs on impact. And then each time the cow or calf bucks around after it gets hit and knocks the arrow back out, and you go pick it up and use it for the next one.
Well, and our cows are, you can't quite walk up and pet them, but when they're in the pasture here, it's like you can, you maneuver through the herd quite often. So when they are on the desert, it's easy to get close enough to get the shot in the neck where you need it to go to.
Right. That's a solid explanation. I can usually get within 15 yards and they just stare at me like, just like as if they were home on pasture close to the houses. So they just are so used to me. It makes it easy. A 15 yard shot's pretty easy. I'm 14 for 14 right now. I'm not proud of the fact that there's 14 of them I've had to treat, but at least I'm shooting straight.
Yeah, no, and it's good and a good option. Why do you think those cows seem to have a higher rate of pink eye in them, and cows specifically, right? Like, there's been a couple calves, but it seems like mostly the cows are the ones that are coming down with the worst pink eye.
Yeah, what we're assuming, and I don't know if this is the cow versus calf reason, what we're assuming is that there's a decent amount of crest wheat on the pasture. Cows do a little bit more grazing, I guess, than calves. That crest wheat has grown up to about the heights that the awns are at eye level as they're eating. And there's a lot of grass on the pasture that they're having trouble in. There's also a lot of flies on the pasture that they're having trouble in. So between those two things, I think that's why it's getting passed around so much. Why not the calves? Maybe because they're getting a lot of their meal still from their mother, so they don't have to have face down in the grass as much. They are grazing as well.
And maybe
that's our guess.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Well, and that's managing cows in general is it's you use your best, all your evidence, and then you make your best educated guess on what to do and how to treat it. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Right. Yep. That's exactly right.
So we've got Coors barley, we've got alfalfa hay, and we've got cows. Where are we in the markets for all of those as far as, you know, the cycle of good cow-calf prices? Where's the hay and barley, you know, in those cycles, and where's the markets for those crops?
Yeah, I think there's still margin for everything, positive margin. The commodities are low. Hay is low. Luckily, we can use that hay through our high-priced cattle. Like I say, I still think that the hay is margining, especially with the deals that we have as far as rent and what we have going on. But the cattle are going to pay the bills this year. We have the advantage of growing that malt barley. The contract is stronger than the commodity price of feed barley or anything else. So that's been the things that I've focused most of my time on this year is the cattle and the barley.
Hi, I'm Tom Herron, founder of Ag Professionals. Agriculture is always innovating and evolving, and at Ag Professionals, we provide the expertise to help you stay ahead. From land use planning and environmental compliance, permitting to real estate, civil and environmental engineering, and land surveying, we offer one-stop solutions you need to grow and succeed. We're proud to support the Millennial Ag Podcast because we believe in the future of agriculture. Let's build that future together. Visit our website, agpros.com, to learn how we can help your operation thrive.
Your dad got those Coors contracts along his career and has been able to help you by passing those on to you and allowing you to continue to grow malt barley versus feeder barley or other small grains.
Yeah, and I think there's a little bit more of an advantage to having storage for the barley. The Coors guys sure like to be able to come almost the next season and have you deliver it in then rather than right at harvest. It kind of spreads out their operations and frees up more storage for them. So I think that's one of the advantages that's kept us in that Coors barley. My dad's always been a good grower of it, and we're in a great area for it. So it's real advantageous.
So you went to the Coors field day a couple weeks ago, and they were talking about where the demand for beer was at. I found that really interesting. You want to share some things you learned on the demand of beer and where they're pushing marketing right now?
Yeah, that's one of the managers that was out there. I think that he was a manager over the research facility as well as the elevator, and did a lot back in Colorado as well. And I asked him how demand was going, and he said that the demand for Coors Original has spiked by about 13%, I believe he said, since the Yellowstone series came out and all the marketing that they've been doing with that, which is great. Coors Light demand was down a little bit, but still strong. And then the interesting one to me was all of the non-alcoholic beverages were trending upward. One of the other good reasons for spike in demand. He also noted that they recently contracted with Peroni. So they're going to be a distributor for Peroni, which is an Italian beer. And they're going to be using the same malt that we use for Coors Light in Peroni, which is great for us farmers. That'll up the demand of our malt barley. And then they're going to use corn from Italy.
So still an Italian beer because they have Italian corn within the beer.
Right, which I thought was kind of fun. So yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting. Also, along that tour, they kind of spoil us. They've got coolers everywhere, so you get to have a cold beer about whenever you want, or you can try their non-alcoholic beverages, or they pretty much have all their different products there for you to try and enjoy as you're riding around on a straw bale trailer and seeing their different plots, which really for me, that was the cool part, to see all the different varieties of barley that they were working with and some of the up and coming performers and the metrics that they were measuring in order to develop the next variety of barley that us farmers get to use. There's some farmers that are getting to grow some of those upcoming varieties, and they'll carry those varieties off to the same process that they would do for brewing and do some test brews and measure everything. I mean, they've got it down to just real small measurements of how they want to dial in their beer. They noted that if you can make Coors Light with the malt, then you can make anything. Coors Light's the hardest one for them to brew and keep the flavor that they get with Coors Light. So that's their research benchmark. They brew that one first. It seemed like, and I probably have all the numbers mixed up and whatnot, but they sure sent a lot of information at us. I think they had 125 different varieties. And as you're going through, you could see some of them were lodging and some of them were super tall and some of them were short and stubby and different shaped heads. And then a lot of them were like the current variety that we grow. So they had some wild different varieties that they were trying to see if they had any chance of becoming the next one. And then they had some real close varieties to what we already grow to just make incremental changes. And their biggest metric is barrels of beer per acre. They have an emphasis on trying to make more barrels of beer with less irrigated acres as well, like less irrigation on those acres. So they had a plot, like a control plot, where they were given 14 inches of water because they've done that in the past and had good luck growing everything to the right maturity with just 14 inches of water. And then they had another plot that they were testing at only 12 inches. So more of a drought stressed crop to look for varieties that needed less water, kind of a good conservation piece. So that was cool. And then one thing that all farmers kind of fear is lodging. You can have your yields cut and all kinds of issues that come with the plant falling over before it's mature and laying on the ground and having the risk of molding or just not filling the heads. So they had a whole area where they were testing out different stem strengths, some different varieties that had stronger, bigger stems, and then crossing them with what they were looking for in a head and kind of working up that direction, you know, with different crosses, breeding crosses, to get a good strong stem with the malt that they're looking for. So that if you keep their ideas, that if you can get a stronger stem on these plants, then you can keep up in the amount of yield that you can get per acre. And if you can up the amount of yield that you get per acre, then you can up the amount of barrels of beer that you can make per acre and be the most efficient company at doing it. So that's their main goal there at that research facility, is be the best malt barley growers in the world. And it's kind of fun to get to go be a part of that.
It's really cool to be a part of it. And it's cool to see the process too, and how long it takes for a new variety to get introduced at a large scale too. It's got to be 3 years by the time they start testing it to the time they could even think about rolling it out to farmers in a large scale.
Yeah, certainly. It starts out as, I mean, they have to brew it before they're really going to take it past even a 7-acre plot, I think. That's the first time they'll brew it, is out of a 7-acre plot. And then from a 7-acre plot, they can sure scale quick. It's amazing. I forget the ratio of seed to malt acres, but you could take that 7-acre plot and make a lot of seed to be able to scale up quickly. I think that once they finally have one selected, scaling up to the amount of seed that they need to grow it commercially is one of the faster parts of the process, which I thought was cool.
Once they make the decision, they can get seed at a faster rate than any of the other testing portions of it.
Right. Yep.
Well, thanks for jumping on for a quick episode. I'll let you get back to going and checking your hay and all the other last minute things. But is there anything else you want to leave listeners with this week?
If you're going through a tough time on the farm and you're wondering about the future, just keep on working and find the ways to get it out of it, because there's a lot of reward when you find times like now where calves are selling at good margin and everything's hunky-dory. So just stick with it, I'd say.
It's definitely a resilient industry we're a part of. And there's some really cool parts of it too that come out of it with the hard work.
Yeah, certainly.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for joining us. And we thank you listeners for tuning in this week.
Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of the Millennial Ag Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends and like, subscribe, and review to our podcast. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or email us at talktous@millennialag.com. Until next week, we are Millennial Ag.